Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As Tulsa's downtown core continues to revitalize, shoulder neighborhoods immediately adjacent to the interdispersal loop are beginning to see a lot of attention and opportunities for redevelopment. 11th Street, with its Route 66 designation, is now seeing a number of entrepreneurial businesses pop up. The Pearl District is also seeing investment, as well as community design standards. And today we hear about a community design partnership for the Unity Heritage neighborhood, which is located immediately north of I-244 in the Tulsa Arts District. The Notre Dame Graduate Urban Design Studio has been working with the neighborhood for the last few months to look at design and land use concepts to benefit this neighborhood, which has slowly been transforming itself, even with little attention from city planners. The graduate students and architecture faculty have been working with the neighborhood residents for several months on the Unity Heritage Neighborhood Design Workshop for this area bounded by the Tisdale Expressway on the west, Pine Street on the north, U.S. 75 on the east, and I-244 on the south. This area includes Brady Heights, OSU Tulsa, and North Main and North Greenwood, the historic center of Old North Tulsa. This neighborhood also has an interesting open area for redevelopment immediately west of OSU Tulsa. I'm joined today by Jennifer Griffin, the principal of J. Griffin Design. She's been the coordinator with Notre Dame, a graduate urban design studio, who are working on the project. She is an alumnus and former teacher at Notre Dame. And Clarence Boyd, the founding member of the Coalescence Community Development Corporation, part of the neighborhood that is looking at creating a cohesive design for this neighborhood. The final plans will be announced early next month, and they join us today here on Studio Tulsa. Jennifer and Clarence, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Tell us about how this design workshop got started. The Unity Heritage neighborhood really has been the source of a lot of interest, especially on its periphery with the FinTube site and all sorts of ideas about this empty space just north of the interdispersal loop around North Main. But how did this idea of a design workshop come about?
Well, it really started as a grassroots initiative. I think just a number of us sitting around thinking about, well, what would it be like if we had the opportunity to envision something here as a community? And just began reaching out to members of the community, various stakeholders, organizations that were involved somehow in the area. And then through certain connections and my connection with Notre Dame, we thought, well, why don't we bring a student group here to kind of give us that, I guess, that design arm to help the community envision what's possible in this area.
Now, has the community been talking about how they want to see their community develop for a while, or what's been going on, Clarence?
Well, I think we started with the small area plan that was completed, I think, November of last year, which had tons of information about the demographics and community stakeholders. And there were some key things that we as a studio kind of took from that to gather information. So we had the community input from the get-go. And then as we started to develop the workshop, kind of just take that to the next level. So there's always been community input and interest in this area from stakeholders downtown, from stakeholders in North Tulsa, OSU, the Greenwood District community. So it's really a hodgepodge of interest going into that area.
And of course, this you know, it's called the Unity Heritage Neighborhood, and really heritage is a big part of it. There is this heritage, but unfortunately, a lot of that heritage is only there in fragments, really, because of everything from urban renewal to, you know, the interdispersal loop going right through the heart of the neighborhood in the 1960s and 70s. So how do you reclaim that? Or is that still a major selling point to the area of trying to reclaim this vibrancy that at one point was a part of this neighborhood over history?
Yeah, I mean, I think a really strong point about the community is that it has that history and the memories of those people here. And to that point, a desire to bring back the positives and wanting to see that area flourish, I think, has been inherent in all the people that we've spoken to that reside in there or have a history of residing there. You know, there are stories that have come out throughout the workshop of just people describing how, you know, they lived there as a kid and they would go down to the local corner store and buy a pecan pie or something. And they have fond memories of walking back to the neighborhood and the people that lived there and the places and spaces that the venues for that public life that they were able to participate in.
Yeah. So, also, from the city of Tulsa standpoint, this is the next step as you're developing downtown, the next step is to develop the shoulder regions around downtown. And certainly you're seeing a lot of efforts in the Pearl District, perhaps to a lesser extent to the west of Tulsa, but you're already starting to see some entrepreneurial efforts west of downtown. Is the same happening just north of the interdispersal loop? Well, we know what's happening in the Brady District, but north of the Brady District.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, we looked at this area, and because of the vacancy and so much, you know, bare land, downtown is developing at such a rapid rate. You can see it in the east. You know, Midtown is already kind of oversaturated. And so the logical place for development to move is north. And as Jennifer was saying, kind of to reconnect the residents of North Tulsa back to downtown, I think it's definitely, you know, the most attractive area in my mind. And that's, you know, before we even met up with Jennifer and the Notre Dame School, you know, that was the area that we were focusing on, because we knew that if anything was to spur in regards to economic development, we were going to have to feed off of all of the activity that was going on downtown.
Let me ask a difficult question. It's absolutely correct. It is the logical place, but there are a lot of cultural and emotional baggage to moving north. As you well know, you're multi-generational Tulsan here. How do you overcome that?
Well, I think that's been one of the biggest challenges of the studio, is really how do we unify this area because of all of the history that was, you know, that goes into this project. You have a lot of, you know, mistrust, bitterness, resentfulness, but what we see is an opportunity. And if done right, and if done through the built environment, those goals can be accomplished.
You know, Interstate 244, as you well know, is more than a highway.
Oh yes,
it's a barrier. It's a wall.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you break down that wall? I mean, does it add something that you have these graduate students from Notre Dame who have no, you know, they're only learning through their community conversations about these sort of psychic barriers, or, you know, mental barriers and unwillingness to sort of look beyond 244 and this barrier that's been between North Tulsa and the rest of the community?
Yeah, I think it's been a really enlightening process, and one that I think has galvanized the community to have fresh eyes and a young perspective that is not necessarily tied into some of the politics and the history, but can kind of come in on an objective level and, given their skill set, look at the opportunities and understand the assets and the challenges. And so it allows them, too, to be, I think, visionary, maybe more so than someone who has all that history in their back pocket, because they can kind of look beyond the immediate constraints and thinking, really, you know, given what we're hearing from the community, if we really think in the future what could happen, it allows them to kind of do that to a greater degree, I think so.
Tell me how the processes work, the design workshop. These graduate students came in. I know they got a lay of the land. They were riding bikes around North Tulsa to just sort of get the actual physical sense of the lay of the land. And then I assume they're talking to members of the community, right?
Yeah. So they came in for a week. It was just over a week long process. And when they got here, they hit the ground running. They stayed with host families in the Unity Heritage Neighborhood area, and were treated with just kind of appreciation. People gave them bikes for the week so they could explore the neighborhood and the surrounding areas as well. You know, they looked at areas not just within the site, but also elsewhere, to look at what are some of the good bits that still exist here in Tulsa, or that are new and that are existing here in Tulsa that we can learn from, and thinking about incorporating them into the future for Tulsa. And so after that tour and site visit, they throughout the week met with various stakeholders at small group meetings, and then had a series of public sessions throughout the week, which everybody was invited to participate and really kind of communicate both with each other but with the students, their thoughts and their visions for the area. And that was a pretty incredible experience. We had multiple times throughout the week, we had over 80 people show up for these visioning sessions, which, given that it's just an academic study, you know, this is not part of a, you know, official process.
It's not a concrete plan.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's just really sort of a blue sky.
Yeah.
And
it's,
right?
It's very hopeful, I think, because it's just saying, hey, these students are coming in. Let us be a tool for you to utilize to help to put pen on paper and start crafting what you would like to see. The small area plan, or the that was developed for that area that the city had put it out was great in documenting some of the existing conditions and verbally outlining the goals that it had kind of understood from the community, that it was part of a longer process of engaging with the community to articulate those goals. But, you know, it didn't go to that next step yet in terms of what does it actually visually look like. And I think there's a real value to whenever you're setting up goals and a community's trying to understand the goals for the future of an area, doing it through design. Because what you find is that people can come together that maybe will be talking to each other and not being able to agree. But then when they sit down and start to look at a design for area, that they realize, you know, that's the vision I want, and so do I. And so when it's kind of done around a design process, you find more opportunities for consensus.
Did you find that the neighborhood came to more consensus about what they want to see, say, in that area on North Main, where you have just blocks of just absolutely, you know, it's a blank slate at this point. Mm-hmm. There were houses and, you know, all sorts of things at one point, but that the land's been cleared and it's been sitting clear for better part of a decade or two decades.
Exactly.
Did you find that the neighborhood came to consensus about what they want, as far as even at this last meeting that was held? There were, you know, park, small entrepreneurial developments, a big development. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's everything in between. Mm-hmm.
I think at the very basic level, those key desires and objectives that we sought out, I think for the most part, the community was in agreeance to it. But again, when you start to go through that design process, there's dozens of different ways that can be visualized. And so what the studio is attempting to do is just give a sample of the possibilities of what can be done. And in order for us to take it a step further and really be impactful, again, it's a study, but that's not where we want to leave it. So it gives us the opportunity to push that forward and do some things from a policy, from a local standpoint, that can affect this change.
You know, when you look at this neighborhood, it's such a hodgepodge, and it really sort of reflects, you know, changing visions for what this area was over a number of decades. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Brady Heights on the west, these incredible well-boned structures that are in the midst of being, well, in many cases they are revitalized. In other mm-hmm. cases, it's an ongoing sort of process. You have other areas which, you know, the home structures were built in the 80s and 70s, 80s and 90s, and they look like they would be more at home in Broken Arrow mm-hmm. than in the district it's in. You have these institutions that are still there, like some of the churches that are in that neighborhood. You have the higher education. So you have this mix of everything mm-hmm. in this. So how do you come up with this design philosophy for this neighborhood, or do you try to embrace all of it?
Yeah, I think in terms of establishing the vision for the area, there's available space for, you know, all these different aspects. I think what's missing is the space in between and their connections. You know, how OSU could be better connected to downtown, how it could be better connected to North Tulsa, how it could be better connected to the space between Brady Heights and OSU. And it's really to an advantage of all the stakeholders, the better connected they are, and what goes in that space. And so I think, you know, in terms of what the possibility for that area is, it really starts there, you know, with the conversation of how can these places and spaces be connected before thinking about, well, do they all fit? You know, do they all belong? I mean, it's a 1 square mile area. I think there's room for everybody, but it's how they connect is kind of the key piece.
You know, you mentioned OSU. You know, the way the OSU is built, it's really built away from the rest of the community. Are OSU a part of this as far as being better connected with its wider area?
Yeah, we met with OSU, and they were very gracious and hosted the Notre Dame students for a morning where they met with some of the administrative folks there, but also they brought in some of their architecture students, which was a really interesting conversation that they got to have with them. What are some of their students thinking about for this campus? What do they want to see, both the students in OSU Tulsa, but also from Stillwater? And so they were very excited. And what came out of it, I think, is, you know, that they were part of a process for that area to be, you know, a larger campus and more than just one school. You know, now it's Langston and OSU Tulsa. And so they're kind of what is left. And for them, you know, there was a desire for our campus to be more integrated and more urban. And these amenities that, you know, our student body would want to see in our campus, that's a benefit to us, too. So they were very much interested in the process. Their visions and their desires for the area wasn't very much dissimilar to the other stakeholders that we talked to. We want a walkable mixed use neighborhood. We want to have all these amenities at our fingertips. We want more people living in close proximity to us. And so it's just how all those pieces come together is kind of the next step.
Now, is the FinTube site considered a part of the neighborhood, or is it adjacent to the neighborhood?
It's part of the study area. Uh-huh. It's a difficult component because of its physical nature.
Isn't it on the other side of 75?
It's
within the neighborhood.
It's
side
within
of
the neighborhood, so it's west of 75, but it's east of the railroad yard.
Oh.
And so there's a big a big butane facility there, and it's really cut off from the rest of the area.
And everybody's touting this is the next big development area, and yet it's been put out for development for a long time, and nothing's come of it yet.
Yeah, I think it has to do with its connection to everything else. Really, when you look at it, there's one, maybe two ways in and out of it. And the connection to downtown, there's only one way in, one way out. And so I'm thinking about the future of that area with lack of connection to anything greater, physical connection to anything greater. It really has to become a destination of itself. And that takes a lot of constituent parts to go into.
A lot of capital.
Yeah, and a lot of capital. It's a large piece of property in really close proximity to downtown with a history. But, you know, it's also dealing with contamination issues and then the connection.
Yes.
And
it's got a lot of issues. So it's not really, it can't be a boon to the neighborhood, and the neighborhood won't necessarily be a boon to that site for redevelopment.
Yeah, other than the fact that just as both areas potentially get developed, there's a greater desire and a greater need for connectivity. And that's not out of the realm of possibility. I think it's just much more long-term of how you can stitch that back to neighborhoods both on the west, but also the east and downtown and the north. So it's, I think, just a much longer, more expensive goal.
Yeah, and I think the students were very, very intelligent in their process and their ability to kind of break this development up into some phasing. And they have, you know, these are the things that we can do kind of 1 to 3 years. These are the things that we can do, you know, 3 to 10 years out. And then in a perfect world, this is what this area would look like. And so I think they did a phenomenal job in kind of illustrating that and letting that be a visual story of how we can get to that particular place.
My guests today are Jennifer Griffin, the principal of J. Griffin Design, and she was also coordinator with the Notre Dame Graduate Urban Design Studio, who has been working with the Unity Heritage Neighborhood to create a design workshop for that neighborhood, which is bounded by US 75, the interdispersal loop, or is it actually south of the interdispersal loop?
It's basically on the south is I-244.
Yeah, I-244, North, US 75, yeah. The Tisdale Expressway, and Pine. Mm-hmm. And that's roughly the area. And Clarence Boyd is my other guest. He's a founding member of the Coalescence Community Development Corporation. He's also working, and he's the banker, in a way, to whatever comes out of these ideas. And I guess the final presentation is coming up at the beginning of next month, correct?
Yes.
In December.
Yeah, it'll be on December 8th in the evening from 6 to 9. And we're still just ironing out the location, which we'll be putting out there.
Now, you've seen preliminary designs. So what do they envision for this neighborhood? What are some of the ideas that are out there?
So obviously just a lot of opportunity for neighborhood fabric, a mix of housing types from single family to multifamily and apartments and that sort of thing, a mix of uses on the ground floor, and a lot of opportunity for some great neighborhood centers. And so that's a lot of the near term stuff is, you know, it's just that infill fabric. There's just a lot of opportunity for that. Longer term things and some visionary examples that they have shared with us that I think have been really interesting is looking at I-244 and that expressway. And that really is a barrier. And, you know, and you can do some near term solutions as the north side of that potentially gets developed in terms of creating an interesting experience going underneath of that. But it's always going to be both a distance barrier, but also just an undesirable
physical barrier.
Yeah, physical barrier, an undesirable experience too, walking mm-hmm. through it. So there are a lot of forward-thinking cities out there, San Francisco and Milwaukee and some
Boston.
Other places. Yeah, Austin.
With Boston. Too.
Oh, yeah, Boston, the big dig. Yeah,
and the big dig. They. But of course, that was billions and billions
exactly.
of dollars.
And what you find is that the reason why some people are looking at converting these highways, you know, elevated highways to essentially urban boulevards is in part because the infrastructure costs so much. And so to maintain that, you know, after the first initial life cycle, you know, and either you're left with a question, do we repair it or we rebuild it, or do we take it down and think of a different model that's kind of more fiscally sustainable in the long term? And so a number of cities have been converting and doing that and have seen a lot of economic benefits for the area in terms of the amount of revitalization that have been coming on.
So how would that work, say, as a traffic flow? Would you make the BA and 75 and the east side of the interdispersal route the primary way around downtown on the interstate system?
So it's an interesting, when you look specifically at Tulsa and the interdispersal loop, that link is actually not necessary if someone wants to maintain an expressway route all out through the city. But in thinking about cities and generating economic value and the revitalizations of our downtown, those models of the interdispersal loop, they're made to get people through the city as quickly as possible. And what we're finding is you actually necessarily don't want that to happen. When people come in to a city, you don't want them to go through. You want them to stop and actually, you know, contribute.
Experience.
Yeah, and experience the city and contribute to the, you know, the retail and the restaurants and the lifestyle. And so the way an urban boulevard would work is that, you know, you have kind of faster moving traffic in certain dedicated lanes and then kind of local traffic on side lanes. But it's all with at grade, you know, planted boulevard with landscape. It's easy to cross, multimodal. And really, it allows more opportunity for people on that to move at a decent pace, but it's much more easy to get off and turn right or left into the neighborhoods and into these amenities that the city wants to begin to provide in this area.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like St. Louis. There is a interstate or interstate quality highway that just becomes a street once it hits downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the sort of thing you're thinking about?
Yeah,
it'd be a big wide street.
Yeah, but it's you know, you're on the interstate, and it's just a series of scales of gradating down to something that's a more local street. It's still a high volume street because you're still moving a lot of traffic, but there are ways of landscaping it and articulating the lane widths and the sidewalks and stuff on either side that makes it seem more like an urban boulevard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if people still are wanting to stay on the interstate, they take the Tisdale North and around 11 and out that way.
Exactly.
I mean, that still becomes the loop is still a part of it. It just moves the loop out of a portion of the downtown.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Has the community had a chance to see some of the preliminary designs yet? Will that happen in December?
I think that's going to happen for the majority in December. I think four of us went up to Notre Dame and viewed their mid-semester presentation. And, I think they spoke for about an hour, but then we had probably 3 hours worth of conversation afterwards. So there was a lot of information that they had to regurgitate. And what we didn't want to do is put something out that wasn't completely thought out. And so I think when we get back in December, when they get back in December, I think they're going to have more of a polished presentation that will kind of get out to the masses.
What's the goal of the neighborhood? Because as we mentioned, this is sort of a blue sky proposal in many cases. It creates sort of maybe some guidelines that will baseline any sort of development in the neighborhood. But what does the neighborhood hope for this to come out of this concretely, if anything?
One is, again, the beginning articulation of a vision. And then from that, and I think this is where Clarence Coalescent Community Development Corporation comes in, is thinking of what are the next steps? These are students. This is student work. They're still grappling with the tools in which they're trying to utilize in their design. You know, they're still learning about what makes a great street, what makes a great neighborhood. But it's the first step. You know, they begin to visualize. People start talking about it. I think the energy and the amount of people that have come around and wanting to see something here really starts to then spur the next steps. Whether it's attracting, investment to the area, or even in terms of the CDC's role of thinking about how can we further reach out to the community to gain additional feedback from them, you know, what sort of guidelines or tools can we set in place for the future development of this area that could kind of help start things off.
It may just be a germ of an idea that comes out of this.
Exactly.
But then all of a sudden somebody runs with that, and maybe a professional developer gets involved, or maybe the CDC reaches out to somebody because somebody has a passion to see that idea developed. Is that is that really
exactly
where we're at with it?
Exactly. It's like I said, it's an opportunity to dream and to see really what happens from there.
Now, Jennifer, I know you've written a lot about shoulder communities and smart towns and other places, their website. How important is that to Tulsa's growth to start developing things like the Unity Heritage Neighborhood, the new block area west of downtown, the Pearl District? How important is that to Tulsa's growth?
Yeah, it's interesting because Tulsa's not, it's very unique in its own way, but it's also similar to other second and third tier cities in that the future of a lot of cities today is coming from that millennial generation and the empty nesters that make up the largest component of the population that, you know, are wanting this walkable mixed-use experience. And so there is this push to move into, you know, the urban neighborhoods of a city. Obviously, the coastal cities and the metropolitan, the large metropolitan cities are, you know, have been experiencing this for a number of years and decades. And the cost to participate in that experience is getting unattainable for a lot.
Even in Tulsa already.
Yeah, exactly. And so what people are finding is that, you know, they're going to these kind of major metropolitan centers. They're experiencing it for a couple of years, and they're either realizing that, you know, this is not something sustainable that I can keep up with in terms of financially or that sort of thing. And so they're looking, they're kind of boomeranging back to, you know, either their hometown cities or other cities that are of a smaller size that have bits and pieces of this, maybe not to the same concentration as the, you know, obviously as the, you know, New York's, the Chicago's, but they have instances of this, and it's also growing, and it's at a point where they're growing now, and they come back, and they feel like they can be part of that revitalization process, and they can dig in and participate in it. And particularly, I think, you know, for Tulsa and for other cities of this size, our real key advantage is looking at the millennial generation in the next 10 years. You know, they're young professionals, they're out there, they're single or maybe couples, they're living in these great cities, they love this walkable lifestyle, it's ingrained in them, this is what they're desiring to do, and they're starting to form families and starting to have children. And it was tough enough trying to think about how can you afford to live in San Francisco in a great neighborhood like this with seven other roommates, and now I'm contemplating having a child. And I've got, you know, not just I want to live, you know, in a walkable area and a great apartment, but now I got to think about schools. I got to think about green spaces. I got to think, you know, a whole range of different components that make up the lifestyle that, or, you know, the amenities one needs when they have a family. And so I think the ability of second and third tier cities to begin to attract this demographic, which is going to be continuing to grow, I think is what will set out, you know, some second to third cities above others. And I think Tulsa's a great opportunity to do this because, you know, we already have a number of shoulder neighborhoods that imbue these sorts of characteristics. And we're seeing, even in some of the nicer ones, that real estate prices are increasing. And so there is this demand that's increasing that, you know, what can Tulsa do to help provide for it? And also there's the element of social equality. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that's a concern, but it's also an opportunity. You get people, these young generation, moving into these shoulder neighborhoods because they like the lifestyle and they like what they have there. And they're doing so willing to move in areas that are made up of a demographic that's different from them.
Yeah, and, a diverse demographic.
And they're willing to and even engage in the schools and other elements. And so these are kind of, you know, the urban pioneers a while ago, they're moving into cities as singles and kind of changing that dynamic. And now the next, you know, generation of urban pioneers are doing that with their kids.
Now, you mentioned the other part of it, education, which unfortunately we're out of time, but that's also the other part of it. We have to invest in education along with the neighborhoods to make this really work.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see the results. That's coming up December 8th, right?
Yes, that's great.
All right. Well, Jennifer and Clarence, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jennifer Griffin and Clarence Boyd talking about the Unity Heritage Neighborhood Design Workshop. Final plans from the Notre Dame Graduate Urban Design Studio will be unveiled December 8th. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening and have a great Thanksgiving holiday.